Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You are listening to Claret and Blue, an Aston Villa podcast brought to you by Birmingham Live.
Hello and welcome to the Claret and Blue podcast. This is a live episode on Facebook. My name is Dan Roach and I'm joined by Matt Kendrick. Matt, how are you this evening?
I'm very well, thank you. It's chippy tea night tonight, so...
Nice.
Chippy tea and a couple of cans, a couple of little tins of pride and joy.
When I was filling out the details of the podcast, I wrote the end of the summer transfer window on the 16th of October. It's not really been a summer transfer window, has it really?
It's bizarre. I mean, I just wonder, you know, obviously we'd have liked a Benrahma, although there's been a bit of mystery today whether he's fit enough to pass a medical or not. But we'd have liked a Benrahma or something snuck under the radar at the last minute. But I just wonder whether us battering Liverpool 7-2, you know, even if Smith had gone and got a strong case to go and get another player, so the owners probably thought, well, hang on a minute, you just battered Liverpool 7-2. What do we need?
Yeah, maybe. So I don't think one result would have made too much difference, but I can see there's a few comments coming in already saying it's a great window, but it could have been slightly better. I think we'd put maybe one striker short, it seems to be the general consensus. But then I kind of think if you spend, say, 20 million on Josh King, is he going to play enough games to warrant spending 20 million on him in the first place? Or do you just take the risk and take the gamble that you don't need him?
Wasn't the general consensus, wasn't he Randy Lerner's right-hand man?
Terrible joke number one.
Yeah, sorry about that. It had to be right, didn't it? You know, Villa have gone into the summer with a strategy where they don't really want sticking plaster signings anymore. They want signings that are going to be an improvement on the first team, you know, for one, and to have some kind of long-term value to the football club or sell-on value, I suppose. The one exception who doesn't fit, you know, who only fits one of those, He's Ross Barkley, obviously, who's coming on loan. And, you know, who knows what will happen to him beyond next May. But I don't think there was any point Villa really jumping in just to add, just for the sake of it. I agree. I do think we're a bit light up front. You know, God forbid anything happens to Super Ollie Watkins. I do think, you know, with Wesley, I think Wesley's put an update on social media today with him and Tom Heaton saying they're getting closer. But I do think it's quite, you know, to go forward with just Keenan Davis really as your only cover up there leaves Villa light. I'm also a little bit, I mean, don't turn this into a moan fest because I'm going for an 8 out of 10.
I was going to ask you what you rated it, so thanks for ruining that question.
Well, I thought that, but I still think a left-sided defender would be welcome for me. I think in terms of, you know, it sounds really harsh, but for where Villa want to be and if Villa want to kick on and consolidate this season, I'm not sure Neil Taylor and Courtney Howes, even as deputies, are good enough options. But again, can't have everything, can we? You know, it's been pretty spectacular in terms of now Villa look like they've got a kind of probably a core of probably 13 or 14 players who can be very good, very competitive at this level.
I think when we did our video in the summer, it was called something like the 30 transfer targets Villa should look at or something like that. I remember saying to James, I would not be surprised if not a single one of these players ends up at Villa, because that's usually what happens. All the media rumours, they never really come to anything to do that. I don't know, mainstream media again. Back at it again. I don't think anyone on that list has ended up signing for Villa. You've got Matty Cash, Emiliano Martinez, Ollie Watkins, Traore. I've written down Trezeguet. It's been a long week. And Ross Barkley. I think Loftus-Cheek was on that list as an option instead of Barkley. And obviously Benrahma was on there as well. And I think we touched on Watkins briefly saying, oh yeah, well, we'll see how much they want for him, but, you know, it seems like Benrahma is the more likely of the two. When you look at those five names, though, you can't help but think $80 million spent and a very strong window.
Yeah, I've said this before, haven't I? That I kind of, I know we're duty bound by our contracts to react to transfer windows very quickly. I don't think it actually says that in my contract. I think it says we pay you to do any job whatsoever that the company asks for.
Yeah, that's what's in mine.
But I don't like doing anything. Parky, how big's that? What are you drinking from there? You're drinking from a dumbbell.
I know, I'm just a small man. It's a big 2 litre bottle just to make sure I get my daily fill of water.
Is this are you really that little? Is this a new spin-off? Is this Fire and Blue the Borrowers?
You actually look quite small for some reason. You look like in the corner of the frame. Carry on, come on, this is a podcast.
What was I talking about? I don't really like, it's a bit pointless on a transfer review podcast, but I don't really like to judge too soon. I'd rather we were doing this in May and then I'd have a bigger body of evidence to, obviously a bigger body of evidence, a bigger body of evidence on which to base my judgment. But Villa seemed to have strengthened in areas where they really, really needed to strengthen. They needed a centre forward who could score goals at a prolific rate. And if Ollie Watkins continues with 3 goals a game, they'll have done that. You know, I'm not sure how many Villa fans, myself included, would have thought we needed an upgrade at right back until we've seen him.
And goalkeeper thought, as well?
Yeah. The goalkeeper one was an interesting one for me because I wouldn't have trusted, other than Tom Heaton, I wouldn't have trusted the goalkeepers on Villa's books. So I think Villa have been super shrewd there. And it makes me laugh at how much Arsenal and Chelsea fans are weeping about losing Martinez and Ross Barkley. That tells me that Villa are in a good place. And what else was I going to say? What was the question?
I don't know. I think we talked about judging players in the past, haven't we? Because I remember this time, probably last year, we were looking at, and this would have been more realistic than in October of last season, to look at our busy summer of last year and judge those. And I think we went through and gave them all ratings. And we were like, oh, yeah, here's a 5 out of 6, 5 out of 10, 6. Yeah, we'll see. You need a few more games. I think this time round, even though, yes, I would still like some more time to judge, I feel like I'm more confident that probably all of those, apart from Traore, who's the one we've seen the least of so far, all of those are going to be good signings, I would suggest. I don't think we'll look back and go, oh, he was all right, Ross Barkley. He had a good start, but he faded out. Again, it's crystal ball stuff, isn't it? But they all seem like fairly reasonable, smart signings, don't they?
I think so. Like I said, we need to judge it over a longer time frame. They certainly kind of fit the type of what Villa need.
Yeah.
You know, they're all of a good age as well, aren't they? I think what surprised me about Villa's window is how readily Villa were, I'll get my words out in a minute. With Hotter and with Neuland, how they were prepared to pay people up to get them to leave. I thought that was a very, very interesting strategy. Now, you know, smarter people than me, of which there are many, would be able to say, is that a financial decision or is that a wanting to keep the core of players that you've got kind of energised and all feeling in contention and all feeling motivated decision? It's probably a combination of both, but it does surprise me that Villa didn't think they could get even a nominal fee for Hotter or for Neuland. But I just wonder, you know, I don't think Villa are carrying that much flab now, are they?
Not really. I was going to say, are you disappointed that we've not shifted more players on? But I'm trying to think off the top of my head now. Who is that? Henry Lansbury, maybe? Is there anyone besides that, really? So obviously, Scott Hogan ended up going. Chester, we all knew, was on his way as well. Samata has gone somewhere. I've already forgot. Is it Fenerbahce? Was that even the rumour? I don't care, to be honest. But do you know what I mean? Like, when I came to sit down and do this, I thought, oh, it'd be nice to see a few more leave, but I don't think there really is. We can afford to lose anyone else, really. Let's talk about some youngsters out on loan and stuff. You know, Davis out on loan, Ramsey out on loan, but I don't think we can.
You can't send Davis out on loan because we've spoken about how likely there are up front if he's not there. I think there's been some interest from a couple of Championship clubs in Ramsey, which is unsurprising given the glimpses that we've seen of him in the cup this season. You know, he's looked really impressive. potentially you could have sent him back out again, because I think the Barkley signing probably does shut Ramsey further down the pecking order. But other than that, you know, I've mentioned Courtney House and Neil Taylor, but they're still needed, aren't they? Because yeah. they're backups in positions. So I think it's been, I think it's been an 8 out of 10 window. What would you give it?
I'd say 8 as well, yeah. Not to be boring and just to copy the same as you. I feel like we could possibly have got another striker, but like I keep saying, when people are talking about, oh, we need another centre-back, unless you're going to go and spend a lot of money to replace one of Mings or Konsa, which I don't see us doing, I mean, obviously we haven't done, I feel the same with striker. Are you going to spend 20, 25 million on a striker that's probably going to be behind Ollie Watkins, you know, immediately to begin with anyway, to sit around on the bench? It doesn't make much sense. So then if you go and spend 8 to 10 million on a striker like a Samatta, who's not going to get a kick anyway and then end up leaving next summer, again, what is the point? The only reason you're buying these players is in case Watkins gets injured, and I know you've got a plan for these eventualities, but fingers crossed that doesn't happen and we don't need them anyway. It's a weird one, isn't it, when you talk about buying backup players, because the ideal world is that you don't need them.
Well, yeah, I think the key point is that the players who were regular starters last season, people like Al Ghazi and Trezeguet, who shared the kind of wide positions between them, you've got to hope, and we've seen it from Trezeguet, haven't we? To be fair, Trezeguet's had a really encouraging start to the season.
Yeah,
you've got to hope that those squad players that we have got step up now. You know, Conor Hourihan and Nakamba were fairly regular starters. I know they kind of rotated the midfield last time, but you know, they're now the backup options, and we've got, you know, that the centre of the park now for me, and I think I'm apologies for boring people who have listened to me bang on about this previously, but it's as strong as I've seen for a long time, to be honest. To have Douglas Luiz, John McGinn and Ross Barkley in there, that to me, I don't know, probably this might come back and bite me on the arse, but that to me is a top eight, top six midfield now, Premier League midfield. I'm not saying that Villa are a top eight, top six Premier League team. I think that's going to be quite a stretch. You know, if Villa finished in the top 12, I'd be delighted with that. But I mentioned midfield, and I'm not even mentioning, you know, Jack Grealish. So it's... It's been, I don't think this is the biggest revelation, it's been a weird year. But the weird thing about it is that we've gone from being absolutely on the brink, probably, what, 3.5 months ago, where me and you were saying, oh, we're doomed.
Yeah.
Us of little faith saying we're definitely going down, to thinking...
Here we come.
The optimism I've got now is something that I thought Villa would build towards over the next 2 years. Yeah. And I'm conscious that can come crashing down quite quickly. But that's been born out of two things for me. It's been born out of Villa recognising that the recruitment team they got in place got it right to a point, but didn't get it right enough last summer and needed to make a change. And Dean Smith realising that he needed to make a change in his coaching team. I think the recruitment's been good, and I think the fact that he's brought in a new coach in Craig Shakespeare has been good. And those things put together, fresh talented players coming into that group and fresh ideas to make the existing people in that group better. So far, a handful of that games into the season have kind of dovetailed quite nicely to get us, you know, probably getting carried away, but probably get us to optimism levels probably not seen since the O'Neill.
Yeah, we had a couple of good spells under Lambert, didn't we, when Benteke was there and Delph, Cleverley, people like that. But yeah, that feels a lifetime ago to what we're seeing now. There's a little bit of, I don't want to say concern in the comments, but people, there's a few people suggesting, yeah, the first 11's good, but beyond that we are a little bit short in a lot of areas, which when you assess the Stoke game, the backup players weren't great, were they? But again, you'd like to think that you're not going to have to rely on them in the Premier League too much anyway. If you do, yes, we are in big trouble if Ollie Watkins is ruled out for 6 months. But I don't think Villa were quite in a position yet, when they're already spending 80 million to improve the first 11, that they have to spend another 40 odd million just for backup players. That's something that will come next season, I think.
I think so. You'll end up making mistakes that Villa have made for the last 10 years if you stockpile players for the sake of it. Let's not forget, this is a football club that won the league title and the European Cup with about 14 players, so it can be done.
So Wolves do well with a small squad as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think what Villa have got to learn from Wolves is their medical department kind of seem to work wonders.
That's true.
So, you know, Villa... I would rather have a tight-knit group of 14 or 15 players that all think they're going to be involved than just kind of signing people on five-year, you know, Habib Bay syndrome, again, yeah. Really, and signing players. You know, Villa had big squads under Martin O'Neill, but they weren't being utilised. You'd think that the fringe players at Villa are at least going to be utilised, and that will keep them sharp. And the standards being lifted by these players being bought in and by Villa looking to improve the coaches should, you know, it's a bit of a wing and a prayer, isn't it, to be honest, because you'd think that if Villa could keep the majority of that starting 11 fit and suspension free for the bulk of the season, Villa got a chance of finishing in the top 12.
Yeah.
If they don't, and chances are they won't, that's where we're thinking, well, what's the difference between finishing 17th and finishing 13th? So that's where the fringe players have got to really step up. You know, that's where Conor Hourihan has got to think, actually, I don't deserve this. What have I done to deserve being bombed out of the team? I need to come back fitter, sharper and stronger and make more of an impact on games. That's where Anwar El Ghazi has got to think, right, I've got to knuckle down, because if I'm a fringe player in the Premier League and I don't take my opportunities, how long am I going to be in the Premier League? Likewise, Keenan Davis, you know, what do I need to add to my game to make me, you know, kind of be under the manager's nose all the time? I need to add goals. How do I do that? And it's setting out these kind of mini challenges. And I actually think that's a shrewder way of doing it than just throwing good money after bad all the time.
It's a really hard balance, isn't it, as well? Because, again, Josh King, the example people keep talking about, if he's coming in for 20 million to sit behind Ollie Watkins and barely get a sniff until he gets injured, that might not even happen, how do you keep him happy? How do you justify spending 20 million on a player that isn't going to come in and immediately start games? It's really difficult, isn't it? I understand that, yes, you need players behind the starting 11, but in a world where signings are so expensive, I don't think you can just go out and go, well, we need to add 12 bodies, let's just go and do that all in one go. That's something that has to build up over time, doesn't it? And when Wesley comes back, you then look at it next season and go, oh, we've got Wesley in backup now. Is he good enough, or do we improve further and then bring somebody else in after that? It's a long process, isn't it? And I don't think it's as quick as just going, oh, yeah, let's just sign everybody we want, because it's just not as easy as that.
Yeah, you know, Villa aren't quite a way off at the moment, kind of being in that elite project big picture, big boys league, aren't they? Self-appointed big boys league. You know, Chelsea, that was the Chelsea method, wasn't it, for years? Kind of stockpile as much of the talent,
yeah, yeah.
And then furnish most of the rest of the world with loan players, which, thank you very much, you've done it again, Chelsea. We'll take Ross off your hands for a bit, but it's not the way to do it, is it? You know, it needs to be sustainable. And I'm really, really chuffed with what Villa have done so far. I've just been putting together I've managed to dust off my quill and do some writing a little bit this afternoon. I've put together a piece, you know, probably banging on about what we've done here, talking about how the window's gone so far. And again, my biggest frustration is I want to see them.
Yeah.
Let us in so we can see them play and we can enjoy these moments with them.
I'm just writing down our best 11 because I think the first choice picks itself now. I've got Martinez in goal, obviously, Matty Cash, Collinson, Mings and Target. Again, you would look at that and say, in the future, we want a new left-back and possibly a new centre-back if you really wanted to step up to the next level. But for now, those two are fine for me. Douglas Luiz, John McGinn and Ross Barkley as a midfield three, probably with Barkley pushing furthest forward as he did against Liverpool. And then currently, Trezeguet on the right wing, Watkins centre-forward and Grealish on the left. And then you can argue that Bertrand Traoré could possibly come in and oust Trezeguet from that side. Obviously, he's the one that we're yet to see the most of. A lot of people saying about Traoré can play number nine as well if needed as a backup option. When you look at that first 11 compared to what we had last year and then, you know, the years before in championship seasons gone by, it's proof that we're heading in the right direction, isn't it?
Yeah, the only thing I'd say, I'd probably have Mason Mount on the left, left attacking position, have Grealish on the bench.
Nice.
It's a lot better, isn't it? You know, it's kind of, like I said, the midfield, the fact that we look like we've got a goal scorer there. I was chatting to my builder this morning, who's a Villa fan. So we get all the behind the bigger the big interviews here.
Get him on the podcast.
And he would say, you need to finish me more first. I was chatting to the builder, and we were both having a good moan about Grealish being left out for England and stuff like that. And he made the point, and he's right, he made the point that, you know, it's funny, we haven't seen people moaning about Jack Grealish tumbling over and falling down and holding on to, other than with the exception of Graham Souness, and holding on to the ball too long in the first couple of weeks of the season. And the reason for that is because now he's got options. He can give and goes around the corner with Ollie Watkins and Ross Barkley. Jack Grealish is a very clever, intelligent player, and the reason that he was holding on to the ball and buying more free kicks last season was because that was the best option. That was the best option to get Villa up the pitch and to create things. Now, Jack Grealish must love this. You know, I've done a little thing about the winners and losers of the transfer window for Villa, and I think Jack Grealish is amongst the winners, because not only has he got a few more quid in his back pocket and been able to get into the England team or the England squad, but he's also got much better players around him who can in turn kind of make sure that he's not carrying that football club on his shoulders anymore, that he can actually aspire to kind of lead Villa forward, both on the football pitch and forward in terms of, you know, them progressing year on year. So I think if somebody would have outlined this to us, this window, 2 or 3 months ago, would have been, I suppose the only downside that I've seen from people saying is, well, we've been buying players from the Championship. And I think, well, I take your point, but if you're buying players who are Premier League bound anyway, might as well get them with us. You know what I mean? You probably pay, you know, if Ollie Watkins, if you'd assign a player of that kind of talent, ability and potential, and you'd already been at a Premier League club, the 33 million that Brentford got out of Villa would have probably been closer to kind of 50 or 60 million. So I think it's been bang on, with the exception of a little bit of defensive cover and another striker. I think it's been a kind of best case scenario window for Villa.
Yeah, I agree. And just on the Championship thing very quickly, John McGinn was a Championship player at one point. Tara Mings was a Championship player. They have to come and, you know, you have to go somewhere, don't you, when you sign for a club. Matty Cash came into Nottingham Forest, and now, if he didn't get promoted with Nottingham Forest, was going to get a move to the Premier League anyway. So we've snapped up one of the best right backs of the Championship and one of the best strikers. Where they've come from doesn't matter, does it, really?
You could Yeah,
exactly. You could have signed an already successful Premier League striker who could be yet to score a goal, whereas Ollie Watkins has already got three against the Premier League champion. So the Championship thing's irrelevant anyway, really.
Yeah, well, what I would say, though, you've got to judge Ollie Watkins when he comes up against a decent defence, haven't you?
I mean, quick word on Leicester just before we go. The title charge continues, doesn't it, as I said earlier, which people took very seriously, which is very clearly a joke, but come on, we've got to win another game, haven't we? 4 out of 4.
Yeah, do you think Leicester really, do you reckon these injuries really are genuine, or do you reckon they're just running scared?
Yeah, I reckon that's probably it. You know, they're probably, you know, that's Son Chu's thinking, oh, I don't want to face Ollie Watkins. I don't want to be embarrassed. Look what he did to Van Dijk.
I'd take a point on Sunday. Here we go. Here he comes again with his pessimism.
Yeah, I probably would, but I think we can probably beat him, to be honest. And this podcast is one of the prime examples of getting a bit carried away, that we'll look back on it at some point and go, God, we were wrong about a lot of those signings, and we're also predicting that we're going to go and win 4 in a row, but why not? We're here now, aren't we?
Yeah, I think the strap line should be, we're not fickle, we're just full of nonsense, to be honest. I kind of see myself as a bit of an anchor, I did say anchor, to you, because you're the kind of younger, kind of more optimistic, enthusiastic one, normally. I feel I've got to kind of just put down this kind of, okay, Daniel, don't get too carried away.
Yeah, fair.
I can disappoint you. So I feel I'm doing this kind of fatherly or big brotherly, shall we say. I feel I'm doing this duty by just You're right. We've just battered Liverpool 7-2. We should be able to go to Leicester, who are kind of reeling from an interesting start to the season and from having a kind of casualty list. I just think this is Aston Villa. As long as we don't get turned over 7-2, then I'd go there and take a 0-0, to be honest.
I think goals.
What do you think?
Yeah. I think we might concede a couple as well. I think that might be us now this season, that we'll score a few and we'll concede a few, a bit like Leeds have started.
How are you going to consume the match on Sunday?
Probably radio at this point. I'm not paying 15 quid. Currently, as it stands. We might come to it Sunday and be like, yeah, we ended up buying it, but I'm against the £15 for one game. Come off it.
Yeah, I'm against the principle of it, to be honest.
I mean, they're probably not going to change. Me just backing out and going, oh, I'm not paying it. They're probably not going to change. But surely if enough people do that, they will be forced into change. But I'm not sure it's as simple as that.
Yeah, I'm not from the school of thought that thinks we should be given all this for free. I understand why they want to charge for it, but I think it's quite prohibitive, the charge that they're making. I think it was, if it was 5 quid, you'd probably be inclined not only to buy all of your own team's games, but you'd probably chuck a fiver down to buy some of the more interesting other games as well as a neutral. But I just think 15 quid is a lot of money. If most of your games are going to be done in that sense, and obviously there was the big Enya Loku thing, wasn't there, last week when she took to Twitter before putting a private sentence on, when saying, you know, it's half, you know, 15 quid, if you pay 30 quid for a match ticket, 15 quid for, you know, paying half for the same product into your own living room. I think, well, I don't really like the word product. I don't use much anymore. And B, somebody rightly pointed out in the comment thread under her tweet, you know, it's 29 quid for the atmosphere and a quid for the football.
Yeah.
Basically, that's what it is. It's a communal thing. It's a chance to kind of be part of this kind of one heaving mass of like-minded Villa fans, isn't it? So, you know, 15 quid is over the top for me. And, you know, I'm not trying to paint myself as the world's most charitable man, but I've chucked 20 quid towards a homeless charity today instead and just said, listen, that's my gesture. I'm not promising I'll do it for every game.
Yeah, steady on.
Although I am quite hoping. I play five-a-side on Sunday night between 6 and 7. I'm hoping the bar where we play five-a-side are going to have it on pay-per-view. So
yeah, nice.
I'm hoping I'll have the best of both worlds. But if not, I'll stick WM on my way back home and listen to the commentary. And when I'm back home, I'll tune into Ashley Priest's live blog for the best coverage out there.
Yeah, I don't think the quality of this podcast will be affected by whether we watch the game or not. We'll chat our usual nonsense whether we've seen it or not, won't we? So it is what it is.
I've not seen a game for years, mate. I'll just take my lead off Twitter.
That's not even a joke either. That is something you do. Oh, can we watch the pundits first so I can know what to say? We all heard that one, haven't we?
I bet they won't even have pundits. Well, they'll charge 15 quid. It'll be one of those ones where it just cuts
one camera angle.
That's the thing, you know, half time when you've just got a little bit of you know, nothingness as somebody comes and marks out the pitch or whatever it is.
Yeah,
I don't think we'll even get Graham Souness.
Oh, well, I'm not buying it then.
I am. Though.
I think that's enough for this afternoon. Transfer deadline day with no transfers, but we didn't really expect it anyway. We're just basically ticking the box of the deadline day hysteria, aren't we, and getting involved. So we'll be back on Sunday to talk about the football a little bit, and maybe we'll get an update on your chippy too as well. We'll all be waiting, fingers crossed, for that on Sunday. Yeah, nice one. Thanks everyone for joining us. Thank you, Matt, and we'll see you soon.
Right, up the Villa.
Thank you for listening to Claret and Blue, an Aston Villa podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, then please let us know. We love hearing your feedback. We'll be back soon with another episode. Until then, up the Villa!